God changes people. One of the reasons we got to get out more is sometimes when I look at myself, I can begin to wonder if that will ever really happen, or I'll always be stuck and trapped with things about myself that as I see them, I do not like them. And then I look at other people. I had lunch yesterday with a friend, and several months ago, a combination of grief and depression was just such a heavy weight and a heavy burden. And he is in a different place now. God has been bringing change, partly become new. And he talked about refocusing his mind and getting away from the way in which life online, screen life, was dragging him down, and just kind of becoming aware of that in other people's lives. And now he couldn't flip a switch. He couldn't make himself feel differently or go through life differently. But there were certain things that he could do. And then God is bringing change. And he's part of us going to Angola prison and standing in front of those men and just seeing people where this way is hell and death. And this way is God and faith and life and purpose and meaning. And it's real clear. And it happens. And there's a life that's going one direction. And you would just think, how could anybody overcome cruelty and poverty and a background like that one? And people do. God changes lives. We can't do this ourselves. It's so interesting how Paul talks about the fruit of the Spirit. It's not my fruit. You can't bear fruit on your own. And there's a constant problem of ego and self-righteousness if I think I'm going to do this. But then there is a role for me to play. I got to stay rooted in the Spirit, and I got to figure out how to do that. And then power comes, strength comes, change comes, and it's possible. So what I want to do in the moments that I have left is read for you one of the great kind of parables. It's a story. It's a picture of how God brings about transformation in us that we cannot bring within ourselves, how the fruit of the Spirit can replace what Paul talks about is the works of the flesh, which is just me when I'm messed up and I'm letting desires run my life and my ego just drives rampant over other people and I don't care about them. I'm not truly generous. I'm not truly invested in how other people are doing. I'm really thinking about, how am I doing? What do you think about me? Just how does God change that? So this is from C.S. Lewis's Narnia Chronicles. One of the books, The Dawn Treader, is about a young boy named Eustace, and he is obnoxious and spoiled and needy and entitled and tiresome and thoroughly unlikable. In fact, it starts with this sentence. Lewis writes, "There was a boy named Eustace Clarence Scrub, and he almost deserved it." And nobody really wants to be around him for very good reason. He's also quite greedy, until one day he is having to sleep in a dragon's lair, and there are dragon's treasures all around him. It's the general understanding about dragons that greedy and hoarding a treasure is central to their personhood. And that's so much who Eustace is, that he actually becomes a dragon. Sleeping on a dragon's hoard, with dragonish thoughts himself, he became a dragon. And part of what this gets to is, over time, wherever my mind dwells, whatever I think about a lot, and whatever drives my desires, that forms the person that I become. But then, in a remarkable moment, when Eustace finds that he has become a dragon, he misses being able to be with other people. He misses human community. He misses being cared for. And it's his pain that begins the process of transformation. He didn't choose his pain. He didn't want his pain. But there's something that's redemptive about it. And then here's the picture of how transformation happens for him. And now you just kind of pray as we go through this story. And we'll have a little time of prayer at the end of this. Another boy named Edmund sees Eustace, and Eustace is not a dragon anymore. He's now a boy, and so he's explaining to Edmund what happened. "I looked up and saw the very last thing I expected, a huge lion coming slowly towards me." Now, as you may know, in Narnia, the lion is Aslan, and that is a Christ figure. That is an expression, a representation of Jesus in their midst. And one odd thing was, there was no moon last night, but there was moonlight where the lion was. So it came nearer and nearer. I was terribly afraid of it. You may think that, being a dragon, I could have knocked any lion out easily enough, but it wasn't that kind of fear. I wasn't afraid of it eating me. I was afraid of it, if you can understand. Well, it came close up to me and looked straight into my eyes. And I shut my eyes tight. But that wasn't any good, because it told me to follow it.
You mean it spoke?
I don't know. Now that you mention it, I don't think it did. But it told me all the same. And I knew I'd have to do what it told me, so I got up and followed it. And it led me a long way into the mountains. And there was always this moonlight over and round the lion wherever we went. So at last we came to the top of a mountain I'd never seen before, and on top of this mountain there was a garden, trees and fruit and everything. There's a garden. And in the middle of it there was a well. The well of life. I knew it was a well because you could see the water bubbling up from the bottom of it, but it was a lot bigger than most wells. Like a very big round bath with marble steps going down into it. The water was clear as anything. And I thought if I could get in there and bathe, it would ease the pain in my leg. But the lion told me I must undress first. Mind you, I don't know if he said any words out loud or not. I was just going to say I couldn't undress because I hadn't any clothes on, when I suddenly thought that dragons are snaky sorts of things, and snakes can cast their skins. Oh, of course, thought I, that's what the lion means. So I started scratching myself, and my scales began coming off all over the place. And then I scratched a little deeper, and instead of just coming off here and there, my whole skin started peeling off beautifully, as it does after an illness, or as if I was a banana. In a minute or two, I just stepped out of it. I could see it lying there beside me, looking rather shabby. It was a most lovely, lovely feeling. So I started to go down into the well for my bath. But just as I was going to put my feet into the water, I looked down and saw that they were all hard and rough and wrinkled and scaly just as they had been before. Oh, that's all right, said I. It only means I had another snake suit on underneath the first one, and I'll have to get out of it too. So I scratched and tore again, and this underskin peeled off beautifully, and I stepped and left it lying beside the other one and went down to the water for my bath. Well, exactly the same thing happened again. And I thought to myself, oh dear, however many skins have I got to take off? For I was longing to relieve the pain in my leg. So I scratched away for the third time and got off a third skin, like the two others, and stepped out of it. But as soon as I looked at my reflection in the water, I knew it had been no good. Then the lion said, but I don't know if it spoke, you will have to let me undress you. I was afraid of his claws, I can tell you. But I was pretty desperate now. So I just lay flat down on my back and let him do it. The very first tear he made was so deep I thought it had gone right to my heart. And when he began pulling the skin off, it hurt worse than anything I've ever felt. The only thing that made me able to bear it was the pleasure of feeling the stuff peel off. You know, if you've ever picked the scab of a sore place, it hurts like anything, but it's such fun to see it coming away. Well, he peeled the beastly stuff right off. Just as I thought I'd done myself the other three times, only they hadn't hurt. And there it was on the grass, only ever so much thicker and darker and more knobbly looking than the others had been. And there was I, as smooth and soft as a peeled switch, and smaller than I had been. Then he caught hold of me. I didn't like that much, for I was very tender underneath now that I had shed the skin, and he threw me into the water. It smarted like anything, but only for a moment. After that, it became perfectly delicious. And as soon as I started swimming and splashing, I found that the pain had gone from me. And then I saw why.
I had turned into a boy again. You'd think me simply phony if I told you how I felt about my own arms. I know they're not very strong, but I was so glad to see them. After a bit, the lion took me out and dressed me.
"Dressed you," Edmund says, with his paws.
Well, I don't exactly remember that bit. But he did somehow or other give me new clothes, the same I've got on now, as a matter of fact. And then suddenly I was back here, which is what made me think it must have been a dream.
"No, it wasn't a dream," said Edmund.
"Why not?"
"Well, there are the clothes, for one thing. And you have been, well, undragoned, for another."
It is the undragoning of Edmund. Being transformed, changed, healed, cleansed. And that is what we cannot do for ourselves. I scratch and I try to take off this and remove that defect, and then it pops back up and it pops back up, and there's another layer and another layer and another layer, and oh dear, how many layers to me are there? Too many for me to be able to peel off. I'm going to need help. We're going to need help. And so we come to him. And we ask him, "God, would you help?" And he really does. And addicts are freed. And prisoners are transformed. And people with deep sadness and people with deep attachments to their own ego and their own image, things that I wrestle with very deeply, over time, where else will I go? In whatever other well would I bathe? Who else will be able to descale me? I have a little coffee pot, special kind of coffee maker, and periodically it says it needs to be descaled. It cannot descale itself, and neither can I. One more thing about this. Doesn't happen overnight. Lewis goes on to describe Edmund. It would be nice and fairly nearly true to say that from that time forth Eustace was a different boy. To be strictly accurate, he began to be a different boy. He had relapses. There were still many days when he could be very tiresome. But most of those I shall not notice. The cure had begun. Where do you want God to change you? Where do you need to be undragoned and descaled and have the skin taken off that I and you cannot take off ourselves? Oh God, would you change me? We got to get out more.
Hey, thanks for joining us. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss any future episodes from John. You can also visit our website, becomenew.com, to access all of our videos there, or subscribe for the emails that go with each video. But my personal favorite way to stay in the loop with Become New is by text. We will send you a text message every morning that we release a new video with the title of that video and just the link to the video. So if you want that, you can text the word BECOME to the number 855-888-0444 and we'll get those messages to you. If you've got a prayer request, there's a group of us who meet each weekday, Monday through Friday, for 1 hour to pray for viewers just like yourself. So you can text or email us your prayer request at 855-888-0444 or at connect@becomenew.com. Remember, the most important thing about your life is the person you become. We'll see you next time.